Welcome to WebAds, Practical Web Accessibility Tips. Website accessibility. Web standards.
WebAx.blogspot.com. Hello and welcome to WebAx podcast number 88. Quick start in 2011. I'm your host, Dennis.
And I'm Ross.
Hello, Ross.
Hey, Dennis. How was your New Year?
Pretty good, pretty good. New Year's Eve was pretty tame, just some time with the neighbors and then hung out with the family after and stuff.
Okay. Are the neighbors web people too, or just neighbors?
Just neighbors. Yeah. Good neighbors.
It's important to have.
Yeah.
That's my dishwasher in the background for anybody watching.
I thought that was your beeper.
Yeah, that too. Yes, my beeper is fully accessible for those wondering.
And then I tried to watch a lot of football New Year's Day, of course.
So. Oh, yeah.
How was yours?
It was good. You know, also low-key, I guess, you know, when you get older, you do less, so it's like, yeah, I went out to dinner with friends, which was
right.
Fun. Watched the ball drop. But, yeah, I didn't go out or do anything major.
On January 1st, I did publish something on WebAx. I thought this was timely, an intro to web accessibility resources blog post. So it just has a listing of several real good introductory or, you know, basic information about web accessibility. So if you're newer in that arena, if you know somebody, send them that link. And see, the first few I think are the best that I listed. They're the one by Web AIM, of course, most people know, and it's now translated in 10 languages.
Ooh, fancy!
Yeah, and then dev.opera has a good one, and WASP. Let's see, I guess some miscellaneous others.
Yeah, so it's nice you can kind of start your new year right. Maybe somebody's resolution is to be more accessible in 2011.
Yeah, let's hope so.
if that's your resolution, please let us know. We'll give you a shout out or something, because that would be cool.
One thing I'm not going to do, at least at this time, is do the monthly link archives like in 2010. So in lieu of that, you can check out the some weekly roundups by Denis Boudreau. He's calling it the Accessi Watch Weekly Roundup on his Posterous blog.
Yeah, okay. I'll have to check that out. I actually haven't come across it before.
Yeah. So I'm glad I saw start doing that. So I'm like, okay, somebody's doing roundups, because until I get an intern, I'm not going to have time for that.
Right. You mean you don't have endless amounts of free time?
No, actually I've been busier than ever and starting to get a little worried about myself.
Yeah, you tweet a lot. I noticed, like, you do a really good job keeping up on social media. And it always reminds me that I, like, never, ever tweet as of lately.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little addicted, I guess you can say.
No, I think it's good. It's always good resources. So, yeah, if anybody doesn't follow Dennis on Twitter or any of Dennis's Twitter accounts. You got, what, three now that I know about? Yeah, you've got a lot of good resources, so.
Thanks.
I need to, maybe that should be my New Year's resolution, to actually provide value to Twitter.
All you need to do is just retweet WebAx account and retweet the accessible Twitter account.
I wonder if I can set it up to auto-retweet.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Anyways, let's see. So you came across this hard-boiled web design? What is this all about here?
Oh, so you haven't heard of it quite yet?
No.
Okay. Do you know Andy Clark?
Yes, somewhat.
So he's written a couple books. He's more of a designer slash CSS guru, I would say. But he recently wrote this book, Hard-Boiled Web Design, released it under Mark Bolton's publishing company, Simple Steps. It's an ebook. It was an ebook first, and they had a limited edition print run, and I was one of the lucky few to get a print copy, and it's actually a really cool book. It's a lot about CSS3 and HTML5, and it goes into a lot about ARIA and accessibility, and then shows you a lot of the cool stuff you can do in HTML5 and CSS3 now, and why it's okay. You know, I think a lot of people are still hesitant to, like, you know, do the rounded corners thing because it won't look like that in IE. But he does a good job explaining, like, yeah, it's okay. Like, don't worry about it. Here's how you tell, like, your client or your boss that it's okay. And, it's got some cool ARIA stuff and cool HTML5 stuff. So I would recommend it. I might actually write, like, a formal review at some point, but I wanted to mention it on this podcast.
Okay. And it looks like that he's doing a workshop, too.
Yeah, he's been doing workshops for a bit now. I haven't heard much about them, but yeah.
It's all in the UK.
Yeah.
So it's £299 plus VAT in Birmingham, Edinburgh, Manchester, and at Web Directions in London.
Yep, so there might be something cool to check out there.
Yeah, that's all in the coming months this year.
It's good. I would recommend checking it out. If you haven't started playing with CSS 3 or HTML5, or even if you have, there's some stuff in there that I was like, oh yeah, that's how you do that.
What else is going on so far this year? Lots of stuff happening. I've been blogging a little more lately on WebAx, which has been helping the RSS subscription rate continue to climb and continue our readership. So one thing that I put up is I responded on some comments on this article, a quick web accessibility checklist. And it was published like several months ago, but it was like going around Twitter a lot. So I read the article and it was so-so. So I thought, like I do sometimes, to write a blog and to respond on some of the comments. So, because there were a few things that definitely needed some clarification. But so I got pretty good reception on that and got some good comments on that. So that was all good.
And there was the 25 ways to make your website accessible.
Yes. So then, well, for the last, it's been almost a year since I started this article. And it's been nearly 6 months I've been waiting to publish this article that I wrote. And it was supposed to be published on a really, really large online magazine. And it went through a big review and everything, and then it was supposed to be just in queue. So for a few months I've been waiting for it just to be published. They said it was in queue, it's going to be published. And the next thing I know is I get an email with some more feedback, like the second or third round. Almost every point in there was, like, completely frivolous. Like, you know, like, there was nothing wrong with the content. They just, like, had a suggestion here or maybe thought this about that. But, like, it wasn't really that pertinent, you know?
Right.
It really made me upset. So I've decided to scrap it, forget that giant online magazine, and I'm just going to publish it with this in-between person that I was working with. And so there we have it, 25 ways to make your website accessible, finally. So it published about a week ago and got a lot of great reception. So thank you, everybody, for tweeting and retweeting it.
Yeah, I really liked it. It was a really, you know, long, detailed, well-thought-out article, so I kind of don't know what the deal was there. And, you know, I had a similar experience with a different large online publication where they published one of my articles, again, using kind of this intermediary person. And a couple days later, I guess they got into a fight with that intermediary person and then took it down. So, and
what?
It never got republished. So, yeah, I kind of don't know. I feel like there's...
That's not very professional.
Yeah, there's... I don't know who these in-between people are who facilitate the writers and these publications, but I feel like there's something weird that goes on there.
Yeah, I think I'm going to work directly with the publisher next time. And I do have a different, very large online magazine that I might work with, but just making the time is now the only issue.
Right, right. We just need someone to clone ourselves, and I think we'd be all set.
Yeah. The 25 Ways got good reception and even made it into Laura Carlson's newsletter, weekly newsletter. She's from the W3C. So that was encouraging to see. She put it very first in the newsletter, so I was happy.
Oh, that's great.
And just to refresh everybody's minds and to get us just thinking about some of these points, I'm just going to read them all off. You know, cause sometimes you forget about some things if you're concentrating more on Flash one day or you're doing more, like, you know, CSS for a couple weeks. And I like to keep it fresh, right?
Right, right. Never want to forget one of the important 25 ways.
That's right. So I'm just going to quickly go through them. Number one, consistent layout and structure. Number two, add alternative text to images. Some of these are so basic, you know, but it's just like...
A lot of people don't
people
do
still,
them.
Yeah, don't do them or forget about them or whatever. Number three, use page headings. Number four, use headings properly. Number five, skip links. Number six, link content, like the actual text of your hyperlink. Number seven, link awareness, such as focusing or hovering. Number eight, be careful with title attributes. Number nine, keep the underline. Number 10, forms. Make them accessible. Is the implied connotation there?
Is that in parentheses?
No. Number 11, make all links accessible to keyboard. Number 12, show link focus. 13, add ARIA landmark roles or other ARIA. Number 14, validate your markup. 15, the three tiers and progressive enhancement. That's a pretty big one. I'll conglomerate it into one. Number 16, use list elements for lists. Number 17, use more than color to convey meaning. Number 18, use a sufficient color contrast. 19, mark up data tables correctly. 20, make changes to content clear, i.e. AJAX. 21 is about Flash. 22, provide transcriptions. 23, add captions. 24, use appropriate language. And 25, test through multiple methods. Yeah, so that covers all what I feel are the basics.
Yeah, very good. I think if you just had that list kind of next to you while you were doing development, it would really help a lot of people. I mean, it doesn't cover everything, but it kind of keeps you thinking about it. And
yeah, it covers all the different areas.
Right.
Most covers the bases.
Yep. There's been some good articles lately, too.
Yeah. So let's talk about Terrell Thompson's first, testing accessibility of pre-populated input fields. He just came out with this, like, about a week ago or so, a good little article on testing pre-populated input fields and a couple examples, and he explains, like, a popular, like, kind of JavaScript remedy where you unobtrusively, you know, add in, like, default text in an input field.
Right.
Yeah, so that method works most of the time, but I guess there's cases in screen readers where there's issues. So he's proposed a fix for that, and there are some good comments on the blog.
Yeah, this is something I see more often lately. I think from a design perspective, sometimes it's nice, like, to if you have a search box, rather than having it say search outside the box, people put search in the text box, and you click it, and it disappears. Mm. But that, you know, has all sorts of potential accessibility issues, like now you no longer have a label, and yeah, the text box says search, and how supported is the JavaScript, and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's fun to get a little tricky and clever, but you have to be careful, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's tricks where you can take the label and then dynamically hide it and then dynamically insert the content inside the input field, kind of like what you were saying.
Right, right. Yeah, and with jQuery, it's not terribly hard, but you always have to, like, unless I was testing it, I'd be worried about how is this behaving in a screen reader?
Right, because a lot of people forget, you know, I mean, almost all screen reader users have JavaScript enabled.
Right.
You know, and so you have to be careful.
Exactly.
Web ads. So another thing going on recently is this big HTML5 logo.
Yeah, really the last week, right, that everybody's been upset, more or less.
Yeah, and there's like, oh man, what a mess. So,
what's your take on it? Because I have my definite opinion, but I'm curious.
I'm for part of it, the idea, and against part of the idea, you know. So if you haven't heard by now, if you've been on Mars, the W3C released a new HTML5 logo. And I think that's fine. And they're branding, you know, they're trying to, like, promote it, and they came out, like, you know, you can order the T-shirt and stuff, and that's all good. The issue I have is with the other part of it, where they say the logo, quote, "The logo is a general-purpose visual identity for a broad set of open web technologies, including HTML5, CSS, SVG, WOLF, WOFF, and others." So they're kind of trying to, I think they're going too far with this marketing thing, and they're saying it's okay to conglomerate all these, you know, to mix all these technologies together and call it one word, HTML5, which is, you know, frankly, it's confusing, because then you don't, how are you supposed to determine what's HTML5, the markup, you know, between the rest of these standards, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. I think ultimately, on some levels, I agree. I think that's kind of, a lot of people are upset because, yeah, they're combining these different technologies under one term, and is that, I mean, essentially, I mean, CSS3 is not HTML5. They're different things. I do wonder if people are making a bigger deal out of it than it really needs to be. Like, my complete guess is that they did this kind of as a way to get maybe people who are not building websites a little more excited. Like, I think back to when people say, oh, I want a Web 2.0 site, and nobody really knew what Web 2.0 is. But now people can say, oh, I want an HTML5 site, basically meaning that you use the most recent web technologies, and a layman can kind of understand that better than, well, we should use HTML5 and CSS3, and I really like that idea of SVG, and that's kind of my interpretation of why they may have done that. And in that sense, it kind of makes sense, even though it's not really accurate. So I'm not completely upset about it.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think some of the more hardcore folks, you know, are upset because they've worked with the standards, or, you know, and I mean, they want the terminology to be clear, you know.
Right.
So there were posts by some pretty heavy stuff from the HTML5 doctor about it. Our friend Jeremy Keith wrote "Badge of Shame."
I actually kind of like the logo.
I just came out with a blog post about this. Not, you know, really extensive, but I list some of these commentary articles, but I also list a lot of the fun stuff that came out with this, including a Flash animated HTML5 logo.
Ironic.
And a really cool, have you seen the spinning logo?
You know,
with HTML5, you could flick it?
You know, it's been sent to me a couple times, and I just haven't had a chance to, like, actually open it. But it's good.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I think it
only works with WebKit browsers.
Okay.
And then this HTML5 pants is pretty funny. You can get boxer shorts. You can thank Chris Heilman for that one. Bruce Lawson, of course, has some thoughts about that, too. And, crap, I can't remember the name. He came up with the phrase that that thought might be good instead of HTML5 for talking about, like, you know, the newer technologies. And now it escapes me. So if you remember, please leave a comment on the show notes.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear what that is, too.
All right, enough about that.
Yeah, there's plenty to read about that if you want to read more. But
WebAds.
I did come across two articles. They're not terribly new, but they are by one of my more favorite bloggers, Jonathan Christopher, at Monday by Noon. And he recently did like a roundup of his blog where he said, you know, here's some of my more interesting posts from this past year, and reminded me that those two were there. And it's pretty interesting. You know, he's kind of playing devil's advocate on the first blog post, which he called, "Is it now acceptable to require JavaScript?" Which is kind of an interesting look, saying that, you know, potentially if we're too worried about people not having JavaScript, could it be holding the web back from all the great things that we could do? And kind of gave some examples of incredible web applications that are completely dependent on JavaScript, like Gmail. And I think the Mac Me, the mobile Me site, completely dependent on JavaScript. Kind of follows that up later with, "We haven't forgotten about accessibility, have we?" Where he kind of talks about, you know, the other side of things, where you can't just discount it, and sort of the different mindset to go through when you're considering how dependent your site is on JavaScript. So they're worth reading. You know, it kind of keeps you thinking.
Yeah, I remember the "We haven't forgot about accessibility, have we?" article that was circulating. I can't remember the JavaScript one, but yeah, that's. I went through the article before we got on the call, and it definitely looks worth reading. And that's something that I've been thinking about for a while, and maybe having a podcast about it or something. So it never happened, but I guess we could always do that in the future, because that's becoming a bigger issue.
Yeah, it'd be worth talking about. Maybe we could get some of our JavaScript guru friends like Chris Heilman on.
Yeah, definitely. I think that would work. WebAds. So that was a good quick article roundup. I just wanted to discuss some conferences coming up. Not sure if I could get the podcast out quick enough, but January 26th to the 29th in Orlando, Florida is the ATIA conference. And I was actually the Assistive Technology Industry Association. You know, I had a presentation accepted there, but I bailed because I didn't want to, you know, it'd be too expensive for me to pay out of pocket to go.
Oh, they wouldn't get you there?
No.
Oh, okay.
So I, you know, I used to live there, and I have a friend I could stay with, but still, I don't know.
Right.
I think maybe I'll try next year if things go well, because I have a few things planned already, you know, in the first half of this year. So, yeah, and one of those things is the I'll be making a quick trip to Seattle for the first time, and that's like March 11th or 12th for a conference, this Josephine Thayer Leadership Institute. That is put on by the AFB, and the reason I'm going there is because there's a special thing happening that I can't yet announce, but I will surely let everyone know around that time when it happens.
Very exciting.
So there's the teaser. I am paying totally out of pocket to go to that, so but it should be worth it.
Excellent. So, well, it's not quite as far, Seattle, and
oh yeah, it's, place, so. It was like the plane ticket was only like $150 on Southwest.
It's a good deal
from San Jose, and then I guess it's about the same time, March 11th to 15th is South by Southwest Interactive in Austin, Texas.
Yeah,
and I will be failing to attend that one again this year.
I might. Heavily considering it. Of course, you know, we've talked about going for so long, and I feel like it's become much more of a party than a place that you really learn stuff. And that's right. Kind of why I would want to go. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see. I might go, you know, despite it not being so much about the panels and presentations, just because it's good networking and you got to go sooner or later, right?
That's right. Hopefully I'll make it next year, but I always say that. But I know what you mean. I mean, I'm going to go to CSUN again instead this year. So I'll be there Tuesday through Saturday, March, I think 15th to 19th or something, in San Diego, which is also a $150 Southwest flight in the other direction for me. But yeah, I'm going there to learn and to attend, but honestly, I'm going a little more, you know, to network, and I've gotten to know a lot of people, you know, much better over the last year and everything. So it should be a great time.
Yeah.
And I'm planning on doing another CSUN conference preview with Jennison, so stay tuned for that. And the last day of CSUN, Saturday morning, if you haven't scheduled yourself yet and you're going, try to stay Saturday morning. There's going to be, you know, activities going on and sessions. And I was asked, I was honored to be on a judges panel for a college student contest, a Codeathon challenge organized by the Project Possibility Organization, where I'm going to be a judge with a few other folks, including Mike Paciello. It's a contest for college students to create accessible websites.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so that should be real cool. So that's happening this Saturday morning at CSUN. WebEx. All right. I think that's all I had to say. Do you have any?
No, I think that's it. Yeah, a lot of conferences going on, so... maybe I'll actually attend one of the four listed here.
I hope you get to go to South by Southwest. And there will be, you know, some good accessibility sessions there. And I'm sure lots of good design, of course.
Yeah, for sure. Here it's always, people seem to like it, so I'm sure it's worth going.
Yeah, I need to look up some friends on Facebook and see who's in Austin.
Not a bad idea.
I think I know this one guy I was on the wrestling team with in high school. I think he lives in Austin, so I'll have to look him up. Yeah.
Reconnect.
He's a partier, too.
So you can meet up with you after the conference.
All right, Ross. All right. Well, another good podcast, and... we'll talk to y'all next time.
Catch everybody next month.
You will find the WebEx podcast and blog at webex.blogspot.com. That's WebEx.blogspot.com.